It's officially 2026, and my New Year's resolution is to prioritize high-quality pieces in my wardrobe. Thanks to Quince, I can already check that off my list. I'm already planning outfits around my new cotton Oxford shirt. It's such a classic, timeless piece that I know I'll be rewearing all year. Need more than just a wardrobe update? Quince has tons of options for the home as well. Maya has had the same dinnerware since college and has finally decided it's time for a refresh, starting with a gorgeous set of ceramic cake plates. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Don't wait. Go to quince.com/rehash for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/rehash to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rehash.
Maya loves grabbing her boobs.
And what about it?
I love it.
It's like a comfort position.
Oh. Freudian.
Huh?
I don't know.
Freudian against yourself? Like, I have my own electro complex, but with myself?
I don't know. I feel like comfort in boobs is Freudian.
Like, for men.
It's reverse Freudism.
Freudism?
I don't know. How are you?
I'm good. Just thinking about those mommy milkers. Apparently. I'm fine. It's, like, nice and sunny out today, so my seasonal depression has been temporarily lifted.
Oh, yeah. The sun is, like, shining into Maya's bedroom, and the cat, Mooney, she's making an appearance. We usually kick her out while we record.
I always feel like a mean older sister when I kick her out of my room, because my cousin used to do that, and I used to sit at her door and scratch the door.
I used to do that to my brother, and I'd put furniture against the door so he could not come in.
My cousin used to, she'd have her friends come over, and I swear the friend would just sit on the bed and watch my cousin, like, scrunch her hair for 4 hours at a time. Remember scrunching?
No.
Really? Oh, it's like when you would get, this is like 2006 to 2008, I think. You get, like, a bunch of gel, and you crunch your hair in your hands so that it looks, like, all scrunched up.
That's
and
so
it looked
fun.
Really wet. No, it was a horrible look.
Oh, I didn't have any older teenage girl influences at that time in my life, so...
My cousin was hella, she was so mean to me. And I would, like, sit, she'd be like, Maya, get the fuck out of my room. And I'd sit outside of her door, and her friend would be like, aw, Priya, let her in. And Priya would be like, no. She's nice now.
Shout out.
We have a good relationship now.
But yeah, Mooney gets to lie in the sun on Maya's bed, and she's so happy about it.
Yeah, she's so happy to be here.
Maybe she'll chime in later. Who are you?
I'm Maya. And I'm...
Mooney's mom.
Mooney's mom.
And I'm Hannah, and I'm Mooney's aunt, I guess.
You are such a fun aunt.
Oh. And this is Rehash, a podcast about the social media phenomenons that strike a nerve in our culture, only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting. This season is all about internet archetypes and the many, many lives they've lived. If you like our show and want to hear more from us, you can support us at Patreon at patreon.com/rehashpodcast, which is where we have monthly bonus episodes, weekly mini-sodes, and early access to our regular programming. If you don't want to join the Patreon, just feel free to leave us a review in Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It really does help. I want to, like, make it onto some Apple Podcast front page thing. That's my dream.
Hannah's a hustler and her dreams are big.
I'm a girl boss. And that brings us to our topic today. Over the past couple of weeks, we've been covering the three words that make up the meme gaslight, gatekeep, girl boss. And today I'll be finishing it off with perhaps the most infamous of the words, girl boss.
I guess we touched on this a bit in our Leandra Medine episode, but there's so, so much more to say.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it almost feels redundant to be exploring the girl boss because we did criticize it. We deconstructed it during the Leandra episode. And that said, like, I wasn't really ready to let go of it after that episode. I was thinking about it still.
She was thinking so hard about it all the time.
we've been living in this post-girl boss world now, which means, like, you know, the phrase and its figureheads have been knocked off their pedestals in our culture. But I do think it's worth looking at the ways that the values that they represented are still around. And, you know, this season is on archetypes, so I wanted to dissect the hashtag girl boss, but I also want to consider, you know, the way she's always been there. She's omnipresent. She's shape-shifting. So, unfortunately, girl boss is not in any of the real dictionaries.
What?
I mean, why not? At this point, YOLO is.
I've been campaigning to get cummies in the dictionary for so long, and no one seems to want to put it there, so I don't know.
Oh my god, well, why don't you start one of those?
I have, like, to pick my battles.
Yeah. But I did look on Urban Dictionary, which is the same as Merriam-Webster.
Oh yeah, this whole season is basically just Urban Dictionary.
And I found conflicting definitions. According to one person, she is a woman in control, taking charge of her own circumstances in work and life. Someone who knows her worth and won't accept anything less. She is not a mean girl, in fact. She hates mean girls. She is empowering and inspiring to those around her. She kicks ass.
And she loves rosé.
And another person said, a person who co-opts popular feminism, quote, girl power rhetoric, as a way to virtue signal to other neoliberals and shield themselves from criticism. So, Mayu, where do you...
Did Dasha write that?
Where do you stand on these two points of views?
Definitely the second. Like, yeah, that is... It's some pretty neolib feminism going on there.
You don't think she kicks ass?
I think she kicks her workers'
asses. Is it neoliberal to kick ass?
Yeah, but, like, of the worker...
In March of 2022, Kim Kardashian spoke these immortal words. I have the best advice to women in business. Get your fucking ass up and work. It seems like nobody wants to work these days. This received a lot of backlash, but I want to know, what are your thoughts? Do you find merit in Ms. Kardashian's argument?
Dude, you can't get me started on the Kardashians. Kardashians are like my... They're my trigger. Like, truly, it's like they make me so fucking mad. When Kim went to get her fucking law degree, everyone was like, well, at least she's doing something. I was like, I don't want her to do anything. I want her to cease being in my periphery. Like, I do not want to hear about her existence. No, I don't agree with what she said. It made me so mad. Like, this bitch has the biggest victim complex I've ever encountered. Like, she did this whole thing, I think it was maybe even in the same interview, where she was like, life is so hard for me. You don't understand how much it takes to, like, keep up with my own appearance. Like, she says that she has these, like, they're not tanning beds, but she has something that she's like this little thing that she has to go into every night to get her skin fixed. But it's, like, in her house. It's, like, her own, like, private, like, plastic surgery studio or something.
Her skin every day deteriorates?
We went way off the rails. No, I don't agree with her. I don't think Kim Kardashian's ever actually had to work an earnest day in her life. I think that the Kardashians exploit the people around them. I heard somewhere that they don't even pay their interns. Like, they're unpaid.
Oh, yeah, their staff are really underpaid.
Their factories are shit. Like, it's like, no, fuck Kim Kardashian.
But you can't deny she's a businesswoman.
This is part of the girl bossification of our society, trying to rewrite all of these women as being, like, actually great businesswomen. Shut up! Like, shut up!
Okay, but let me list some Kardashian businesses for you. For those who don't know... Kim Kardashian had a very successful business venture with Skims. And then we have Kylie Cosmetics. And we've got Chloe's Good America.
Oh.
And we've got Kendall's 818 Tequila. And then we've got Kourtney's Goop Knockoff Poosh. And then Chris is just an evil business genius. She's actually a genius, but she's scary.
She's kind of like Roger Stone to me, where I'm like, you're so evil that I have to applaud you, because it's like, you're that evil.
She has the brains.
You're unabashedly evil, and that's okay.
Like, you just can't deny that she's good at what she does, even if you don't like what she does.
Like, I like her more than her spawns.
I'm going to call myself out and say that I didn't have to Google any of their businesses. Like, this was top of brain knowledge. I'm 818. Tequila plays a big part in the most recent season of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Oh, are they trying to supplant Vita Tequila?
No, this isn't even about Vita Tequila. This is about Kathy Hilton's tequila brand.
No, all I care about is Vita Tequila.
Vita Tequila?
Who's your least favorite Kardashian?
Khloe. Because I used to think she was funny when I watched the show, like, when they were younger. And She is like the hardest one to actually get through to, I think, with criticism too. She's just so defensive and
so annoying. Also, I stan Jordan Woods. Sorry. That situation made me laugh.
Courtney is my favorite.
I don't have a favorite. I honestly hate them all so much.
Courtney makes me laugh. I'll be real with you. Right under our eyes, the women who were known for being on reality television extended the reach of their capitalist tentacles and decided it wasn't enough to get paid to promote other people's products. They wanted to sell their own. And then their businesswoman. 4 out of 5 of them have multiple children, and 2 out of 5 are alleged billionaires. So even though they're never really called girl bosses, I really think that they are society's actual epitomes of the girl boss.
Well, I think that's how they've maintained longevity. Like, the shit that they've done is, if we're talking about cancel culture, like is so cancelable all the time, over and over and over again. But they've managed to keep in the public eye because they live in this realm of so many, like, I think, women's minds of being inspirational and being the inspiration between a lot of women's drive to make money, essentially.
Yeah, and they know how to craft a narrative. I think the fact that we have seen them be vulnerable in some capacity on their television show allows us to humanize them, because we're like, oh, Kim Kardashian's a terrible person, but I also do feel bad for her in her divorce with Kanye.
But I think, like, just the way that they've managed to mythologize themselves as self-made women has allowed that to eclipse any sort of valid criticisms against them, truly. I just really miss the era of the dumb socialite. I don't even care if you're not really that dumb. I don't care. I just want to see you be dumb on screen. I don't want anything else from you. Truly.
Bimbofication.
Bimbofication is a whole other thing that's been mythologized in a way that's dangerous. But, like, they're reality stars, and that, to me, there's nothing more to them than that.
I know, but I do think that goes into the idea of the girl boss, where, like, it feels like everybody who does one thing has to justify their existence by doing another thing. They're like, you're famous for doing nothing, so now you have to, like, prove to us that you can also contribute to capitalism.
Well, I think also it's just boring being someone who does nothing.
Yeah.
So it's like you have to kind of expand your ventures. Reality TV exists within a capitalist sphere already. The entire point of capitalism is to diversify, right? So They're diversifying their brands. And reality TV stars have a brand in the first place. So it's all capitalistic.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. who?
I don't know.
Yo, R.I.P. Early capitalism.
Allow me to provide some brief historical context for the girl boss. Before we had the hashtag girl boss, we had 2 major waves of women entering the workforce in North American history. God, this is going to be a dumbed down history lesson because I've bimbified it. These movements certainly contributed to the progress of women, and I'm not denying that. But importantly, like the girl boss, they were adopted and propped up by institutions which did not ultimately have the interests of gender equality at heart. So the first movement came during the Second World War, where women were called upon to take over the factory jobs that men left behind while they fought overseas. That's where we got Rosie the Riveter. Interestingly, this also came with a major rise in marriages. In 1942, weddings in the United States had increased 83% from 10 years earlier, with 2 out of 3 brides marrying newly enlisted soldiers. And these were like young women marrying young men. So we just had this large wave of young brides who were left alone because their husbands went off to war, and
the boys gotta have something to think about. Half the purpose was so that the men would have something to like hold on to while they were at war.
Yeah, and I also just think you have all these really young people coming out of high school forced into this extremely adult situation, and it feels like a natural way to kind of cope with it.
Natural, but also I think it was an actual effort,
yeah,
on the part of the U.S. to get people hitched before war.
True.
It's a huge part of the government's like propaganda effort, right?
Yeah. And then the men came back and they were like, get back to the kitchen. And we had the 50s.
For some reason, every time I hear get back to the kitchen, my brain flies back to 2013 with all those like, go make me a sandwich jokes, you know?
Oh, was that a 2013 thing?
I felt like it was a big shock humor era joke. Maybe 2012.
Yeah. Or boys at middle school parties being like, girls should make sandwiches.
His name is Kyler, and
he
wears Huff or like West 49.
And his best friend is named Jordan.
He rides a BMX. I can smell him.
Axe body spray. And moving on. Then we had the 1980s. and we had second wave feminism had come along in the decades preceding it, and its values of equality were co-opted by capitalism. And Reagan era America was like, put your bras back on and throw on a power suit. Money, money, money. Of course, women kept their traditional family structures, but now their households maybe had two incomes because they didn't want to end up like Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction.
Oh, no. Yeah, no one wants to be Glenn Close in the bathtub.
That movie's boring.
That movie sucks balls. I'm sorry. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
I really was excited to watch it. It's so boring. And this is where we get this catch-22 where women are importantly seeking financial independence from their husbands, but of course also doubling their workloads because they have families to take care of at home. They're running households, but they're also probably typing for men who are running boardrooms. Obviously, second wave feminism has its flaws, but do you think that like the Reagan era politics contributed to its negative legacy at all, or is that just past second wave?
I do think that the Reagan era did contribute to a cultural backlash against second wave feminism. It's kind of hard though, because though second wave feminism did kind of engender an ideal of women being in the workplace that was then co-opted by neoliberal politics, right?
Mm-hmm.
I also think that second wave feminism kind of grew into 80s feminism, which was very much like the radical anti-porn movement,
yeah.
Which I think has now become kind of the face of second wave feminism in a way, like the Andrea Dworkin type,
yeah,
radical feminist. So I think that also contributed to it. Like, it grew into something that the public just couldn't deal with, even though I actually think it has a lot of merits to it. Like, I don't think second wave feminism is inherently capitalistic for saying that it wants women to be in the workplace. I think that there was a lot of Marxist leanings towards second wave feminism, like Marxist sects of that wave that have been kind of overlooked throughout history.
Yeah, well, Marxist feminism is where this idea of like women doing unpaid labor at home comes about, and like that is an important thing to remember, that even when we're encouraging women to go into the workforce, they're still just pulling double shifts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then we have the modern girl boss, which came from the rise of mainstream feminism in the early 2010s. So by their standards, it wasn't enough that you were earning as much as your husband. You had to be earning more or finding a way to monetize like any of the hobbies that you had that kept you from gone girling him. Like, you had to be on that ball. Do you have any specific theories? I guess we just talked about this, but like about why feminism just keeps being co-opted by capitalism. Like, do we think it's possible at all for feminism to exist without that happening?
I think we need socialist feminism, yeah, to be able to exist without capitalism co-opting it, because the market supplants most ideologies in our current world, right?
Yeah.
I think when something enters the mainstream vernacular and it starts taking over public consciousness, like, the entire point of the market is to understand what consumers want and what they're looking towards. And if that means that a new, slightly radical, or like at the time, radical political ideology is coming into mainstream attention, the market is going to be like, oh, well, we can sell that back to them.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just think as long as we live under capitalism, it's going to be hard for feminism not to be co-opted by it. I think that feminism has very much lost its socialist influences, like in so many ways, and we need it again.
I think the thing about feminism is that it's not a singular ideology either. It's a framework of, I think, looking at other ideologies through a gendered lens. So it's hard because I think even within the history of feminism, there have always been these like conflicting ways to go about it.
And I also think to get feminism to be palatable to everyone, people have had to do a lot of work to be like, no, this isn't radical feminism. This feminism wants equality for all. And it's like, no, that's not what this is about, actually. This is equitable feminism. And radical feminism, when I said it had a lot of merits, is because it was extremely Marxist. And the fact that people say it's radical means that you're trying to dilute the intentions of it.
Well, yeah. And I mean, even thinking about the suffragettes, like, it's not necessarily that they were challenging the overall status quo a lot of the time. It was just they wanted to challenge white women's place within the status quo.
So exactly.
If we're talking about like feminist ideology, scholars, texts, this is actually very important, because in 2014, Sofia Amoroso popularized the term hashtag girlboss with her book, hashtag girlboss. And I would say after The Second Sex, it's one of our most important feminist texts.
Simone de Beauvoir is quivering in her boots.
I read this stupid book. I listened to the audiobook.
So you were actually just passive listening.
There are only so many hours in the day.
Did you pirate it?
No.
Oh, you bought that shit.
No, I didn't buy it. I went all the way to the library, renewed my library card, and then used the Libby app, which I highly recommend if you have a library card. Okay, so Amoroso was a former crust punk anarchist who grew her vintage clothing business on eBay into the now bankrupt company Nasty Gal.
Wow, the pipeline from crust punk anarchist to girl boss capitalist is apparently a short one.
And you would think that the book would be more interesting for tracking that, but it's really not. In the early pages, Amoroso makes sure to inform us that hashtag girl boss is not a feminist manifesto, business advice book, or a memoir.
Wait, so what does she actually think her book is, though?
She's like, this is just my story, and maybe you'll learn some things about how to be a girl boss. For example, she gives a list of job interview no-nos, and she just, like, names obvious things like, don't chew gum, don't pick your nails, wear a bra.
The crust punk is telling us to wear a bra?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
So she's...
Never will I ever.
She's clearly proud of her unconventional origin story, and it does stray from the typical girl boss archetype, but highlighting how she used to be a Marxist who dumpster dived incites a different kind of contempt within me, because she didn't start in the world she joined. She chose to join that world.
Yeah, it's also kind of like, look how clean I got, basically.
Yeah, so let me read you this quote. I once believed that participating in a capitalist economy would be the death of me, but now realize that agonizing over the political implications of every move I make isn't exactly living. Eventually, I got sick of listening to my friends whine about living in poverty while refusing to get a job. Compromise is just a part of life. We all, at some point, find ourselves either directly or indirectly supporting something we disagree with.
There's a difference between living within capitalism and then becoming, like, a capitalist overlord.
I know.
It's just really just kind of, like, turn your brain off, like, how I learned to stop worrying and love the pink economy. Yeah.
Well, it really is just her saying, I had to give up everything I believed in, and I believed in them a lot because I literally dumpster dived.
Can't you just be a person? Like, why do you have to go so hard in both directions?
I don't know.
But, I choose crust punk over.
She's like, this is how she sees herself, as this different character who doesn't fit in anywhere, and she never got along with anybody because she's always just doing the rebellious thing. And if you're a crust punk, I guess it's rebellious to become, like, a CEO.
It's kind of like in the Dirtbags episode, because it's no longer cool to be like a socialist dirtbag. The cool thing is to be a Catholic trad.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. This book was like marketed at the time as a feminist book. I remember reading blurbs about it in like Teen Vogue and stuff. But it's not actually even trying to be. Like, Amoroso appears to have no interest in feminism or really any causes outside of like her own self-interest. But I pulled some fun quotes that she has about feminism.
Yay.
Girl Boss is a feminist book and Nasty Gal is a feminist company, in the sense that I encourage you, as a girl, to be who you want and to do what you want. But I'm not here calling us woman, W-O-M-Y-N, and blaming men for any of my struggles along the way. I have never once in my life felt that being a girl was something I had to overcome. And then she goes, I believe that the best way to honor the past and future of women's rights is by getting shit done. Instead of sitting around and talking about how much I care, I'm going to kick ass and prove it. And then the last one. Is 2014 a new era of feminism where we don't have to talk about it? I don't know, but I want to pretend that it is. It's like, why are you even bringing feminism into this if you clearly just don't want to be associated with
it? But also, why are you writing this book and like differentiating yourself as a girl boss if you don't want to talk about feminism? Like, you're being the loudest about it.
I mean, there's something honest there about the idea that girl boss's origins, despite feminism being shoved in there, are like not actually someone even trying to make it feminist. She's just like, I guess this is how I brand myself.
Then just call yourself a boss then. Why are you calling yourself a girl boss?
She's just a girl.
I'm just a girl.
So hashtag girl boss, the book, received mixed reviews. People found Amoroso herself like charming, which I don't get. But they pointed out that her business advice was weak, which it is. But its mark on the culture was undeniable, even if you didn't read the book or watch its like Netflix adaptation, which was not very good.
Netflix adapted the book to what?
to a show called Hashtag Girl Boss. It's about a Sophia living in San Francisco, starting her eBay company, and RuPaul plays her neighbor.
Famous fracker.
So the New York Times reviewed it, and the review ended with this disturbing quote, which I think perfectly sums up the ethos of this whole girl boss movement. Ultimately, though, Amoroso's scrappy capitalist narrative makes an admirable attempt to prove that navigating the system isn't the same as endorsing it. Being anti-establishment is the old cool. The new cool is playing by your own rules and still winning by their standards.
This really does have a lot to do with, like, the California and, like, Silicon Valley ideology of like, the hippie anti-establishment capitalists.
Well, it's, like, the pink-washed version.
Yeah, exactly.
And she did get her start in San Fran. So hashtag girlboss exists within a greater genre of fempowerment lit. Memoirs, self-improvement guides, business advice. If you were a woman with a company, you were getting a book deal, basically, at this time. So this includes people like former Facebook COO Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In, which I was couldn't get a hold of from the library, so I...
Oh, so we did have a Silicon Valley bitch coming in here.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Lean In was kind of the first in this wave. It came before hashtag girl boss. And then we have later versions, like Rachel Hollis's Girl Stop Apologizing, which we will be talking about, as well as a number of other books, you know, your relatives might have bought you for Christmas because they knew you were into feminism, and it was in, like, a girl power section at Indigo.
Not my family. Every time feminism gets brought up, they all look at me and I'm like, I get it, not one single one of you guys are feminists, but
I have a lot of these types of books that I've accumulated over the years. While looking for books for this episode in the Toronto Public Library's Women's Studies section, I also came across Ivanka Trump's Women Who Work, which I don't really have a comment on that. I just thought it was funny.
Is it time that we call her a cunt in this episode?
Someone's going to make us apologize for it.
Girls, stop apologizing.
Oh, yeah.
For calling other women cunts.
Okay, merch.
Girls, stop apologizing for calling other women cunts. I'm going to wear it. Like, it's just going to be in big red letters
on
my
calling other women dot dot dot. So you've never read, like, any kind of fempowerment book?
No.
Okay.
I don't read any, like, self, like, nonfiction self-helpy type books at all. I'm such a bitch in this episode.
I know, and I'm such a silly goofball. She's the straight man to my, like, wacky guy.
Oh, I thought you meant, like, I'm just a straight man. I was like, huh?
You're just a straight man, and that's why you don't understand girl bossing. If Sophia Amoroso is the rebellious, think like a man girl boss archetype, then I want to tell you about someone who embodies the inspirational phrase stickers written in cursive on water bottles type of girl boss. This type of girl boss is less intimidating, but I would say equally insidious. And that's where we're going to talk about Miss Rachel Hollis. You don't know anything about her, do you?
I do know about her.
Oh, okay.
I don't really remember much, but Mooncat, she's another YouTuber. She has a whole video about Rachel Hollis. That's really awesome.
Okay.
Go watch that, guys, after you listen to this.
And I would also say, if you want to learn more about her as a fitness influencer, and Maintenance Phase has a really good, like, two-parter on her and her book, Girl, Wash Your Face, which is importantly not Girl, Stop Apologizing.
I think that's talking about. That's the one Mooncat's video is on, is Girl, Wash Your Face.
We won't be getting into that, so you can watch both. There won't be crossover. But to give you a brief idea, she started as a blogger with a company called Chic Media. She was married to the head of theatrical distribution at Disney.
Yo!
She was operating from a place of wealth when she sought out her own girl boss endeavors. She first blew up in 2015 for posting a photo to Instagram of her stretch marks with the caption, "I have stretch marks and I wear a bikini. I wear a bikini because I'm proud of this body and every mark on it. Those marks prove that I was blessed enough to carry my babies and that my flabby tummy means I worked hard to lose what weight I could." This propelled her and it popularized her blog. And she went on to write her self-help book, Girl, Wash Your Face. And then the follow-up, Girl, Stop Apologizing, which I tried to read a bit of. I did. I was really hungover and trying to build an IKEA bed frame, and it was just a recipe for disaster.
Did you tell yourself, Girl, Stop Apologizing, every time you fucked up?
Yeah, every time I, like, dropped something heavy on my foot, and I was like, sorry, to myself. And then I was like, Girl, Stop Apologizing.
And then you were like, Girl, Wash Your Face, because you were sweating.
I called my dad, and I was like, I don't know how to do this. You need to come over for an hour and help me.
Rachel Hollis is going to raise hell upon you. So where Girl Boss was like trying to mask itself as rebellious, Hollis is like appealing to the live, laugh, love crowd. And when I first started the book, I was just amused because it was so lame. Like, it starts with her explaining how she was going to name the book after Demi Lovato's song, Sorry Not Sorry, which she heard because one of her younger employees was playing it at like a pump-up dance party they do before their Monday morning meetings.
So lame.
She's obviously a working mother. She doesn't have the time to keep up with the internet.
She doesn't have time to do regular human things. She's working all the time.
She has to know about it from her like 20-year-old interns before she like sits them down for a meeting. So... of course, I was falling for the thing that people like Rachel Hollis are so good at. Like, she seemed normal and approachable. And then a few chapters in, she was, like, telling me I was lazy for not committing to a 20-hour workday. Sophia Amoroso is, like, a blatant asshole. But Rachel Hollis is scary in this sorority sister way where she's like, come, join me. And then she's like, you're doing this wrong. You're doing this wrong.
She's scary in, like, a blonde way.
Yeah, but she's not even blonde.
What?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm just picturing all those blonde sorority girls on TikTok.
I'm sure they love her. And, you know, obviously her understanding of equality is limited, or inequality. She acknowledges in her book that there are reasons why some people might not be conditioned to believe in themselves, but doesn't actually touch on, like, the structural causes for that, which makes it much easier for her to then go, the thing that's stopping you is you. And she actually says that everybody, including single mothers and people working multiple jobs, are in control of their own schedules. And that if they would just stop watching TV for a couple hours every night, they could start a successful business on top of raising kids and doing their jobs.
Great.
It's just classic, like, self-help bullshit, but it's dyed pink.
Every single moment you have to yourself, you should be putting that into your business.
Yeah. So you can be a really important person, like an event planner, which is the business she was starting off.
When Shut the fuck up.
She's like, I interned for mean event planners. And then I turned it into like a weird Christian novel about mean event planners.
About mean event planners?
Yeah, she like wrote a fiction book about someone in the party planning world based off of her experience of trying to become
like getting bullied by another party planner, because that's really funny.
But then in April 2021, Hollis posted a TikTok in response to people calling her unrelatable for talking about her housekeeper, who she refers to in the video as this sweet woman who cleans her toilets. You seem to have thoughts.
No. I have no words.
So yeah, this part, there's a lot to unpack. I think it's important for high-powered people, specifically women, to be transparent about the help that they get in their daily lives, because they are selling this idea of like, I do everything. But then in her doing that, she is completely patronizing and like devaluing the work of another working woman because her work is not valid.
Well, she's working for someone.
Yeah.
I think that's the whole point, right?
Yeah. The TikTok was about how neither she nor her idols were, quote, relatable. In the caption, she compared herself to a number of famous women. Many of the figures were ones who often end up in those, like, badass woman, you know, picture books or puzzles or on socks. She names RBG, Frida Kahlo, Amelia Earhart, etc. And these women are all obviously important historical figures, but they're also pioneers in their own fields. It makes sense why Rachel Hollis would add them to that list. But then she also included Harriet Tubman and Malala.
Oh my god. This isn't the first time Harriet Tubman has been invoked in the Girl Boss narrative. Which just, what are you doing for the world? Like, truly, you're a fucking event planner. Like, all of these women's businesses are so self-serving, and a lot of them are actually so damaging to the world.
Yeah.
Whereas Harriet Tubman, one, no, she's not a business owner.
No.
Even Malala. Malala is not a girl boss.
No. She was like a literal activist who got shot in the head.
Malala wants girls to go to school.
So she...
neither of those women are serving capitalistic interests.
No.
Like, or that was not their initial, like, purpose in the world.
She obviously got flack for this, particularly for the Tubman comparison. I mean, equating her hustle for her self-help, like, business, whatever she does, with Tubman's work as, like, an abolitionist, just, like, highlighted how out of touch the girl boss figure is, and I think it got a lot of people talking about that.
She says she's motivated by the desire to live a life that no one can relate to because she wants to be special and she wants to, like, make it onto a pair of socks like Frida Kahlo. But Harriet Tubman and Malala risked their lives because they actually had causes greater than themselves to fight for. Like, they put themselves in danger because they were like, this is more important.
It was also like a communal collective cause. Yeah. Like, the girl boss is just about doing things only for yourself and no one else.
Yeah, and there's not actually a greater goal for society that they're working towards, even if they, like, want to throw feminist terminology into, like, their speeches sometimes.
Of course.
How do you feel about this trend of turning female historical figures into merch or icons? Even women where it doesn't feel as horrible to name them in these roundups, someone like Harriet Tubman. You know, even a woman like Amelia Earhart or Queen Elizabeth I, like, women who have their accomplishments and their flaws boiled down without political or, like, historical context because they did something that women didn't usually do.
Yeah, they all get put on stickers and you can find them in, like, a random variety shop in Brooklyn.
Do you have any specific feelings about that?
I just think commodifying any sort of social justice, like, I've always taken a hard stance on this, and I think we've talked about it before, yeah. But I just think commodifying any sort of social justice is an inherent bad. I'm an anti-capitalist. Like, I just don't believe in commodifying that kind of thing. And then, yeah, I think lumping them all together really devalues the differences in their achievements. Because, like, yeah, great that Amelia Earhart flew around the world. Like, awesome. I don't think that's the same as, like, Malala taking a bullet to the face, you know?
Yeah, or, like, those picture books.
Not that we shouldn't talk about this as if Malala opted to take a bullet in the face. Like, she got shot and she didn't want that to happen.
No, but she was...
But this is something that happened to her in protest.
Yeah, like, she was doing something that was putting herself in danger. And, like, I don't think that Rachel Hollis would ever do anything that put herself in danger.
Neither would Queen Elizabeth I.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is, like, these books that will tell little blurbs about historical figures and they'll list Rosa Parks and Margaret Thatcher in, like, the same book.
Well, it's just, like,
women.
Yeah, Margaret Thatcher and Queen Elizabeth I are definitely early girl boss influencers, yeah. But can we all come together and say that they did amazing things? I mean, Queen Elizabeth I, obviously, you can make some concessions for her. She did do quite a lot of things, but, you know, in today's standards, not great things.
Yeah.
That was so vague. What a vague recap of Queen Elizabeth I.
She did some things that by today's standards might not be good, but, you know, she did things. So... As we discussed in our Man Repeller episode, the hashtag girl boss reckoning came about in the late 2010s and early 2020. The CEOs whose work lined the shelves of big bookstores were all stepping down from their companies following accusations of things like workplace abuse, harassment, and racism. According to Forbes, there was a huge spike in the usage of hashtag girl boss across social media platforms in 2021, around the time that these notable women were being canceled. Which is around the time that the girl boss memes began to really take off. So the ironic phrases, you know, they hate to see a girl boss winning, or girl bossing too close to the sun, or calling Anna Delvey a girl boss. And of course, Gaslight Gatekeep girl boss, to name a few. I read a lot of think pieces by women who felt that this ridicule of the girl boss was unfairly taking the sins of, like, a select few women and using it to represent all, like, high-achieving women. Mm. And we've talked about this. I remember, I think it was 2017, around then, that I had followed this feminist meme account. Oh, God, the meme made me so mad. It was like, I bet Hillary Clinton thinks Greta Gerwig is a girl boss.
What? What does that even mean?
Because Greta Gerwig was the woman of the moment, at least in the film industry. She was the one woman who was, like, getting nominated for these awards and getting these accolades. And so, of course, she is a girl boss on par with Hillary Clinton.
I guess being a director is being a boss.
I don't even think it was about having a boss position. I think it was just that she had, like, succeeded in a industry where women don't usually succeed.
Right. Which is kind of what the new moniker means.
Yeah. And I mean, you've explored this in your YouTube videos, the idea that any of the few successful women in a field, specifically directors, is what you often talk about, is lumped under this girl boss umbrella where they're held to, like, a much higher standard than men. Do you think that these memes are part of that criticism of, you know, women like Greta Gerwig, who have succeeded in their field against, you know, gendered odds.
And so they're being measured at like at an unfair standard. I think criticisms of CEOs should be on par with criticisms of CEOs. Like, I think that my criticisms of Daniel Bernstein or Sophia Amoroso or these women who are contributing to, like, the destruction of our climate and the exploitation of, like, thousands of outsourced workers is a class criticism. But I do think that because these women are annoying and loud and because they've taken up this self-righteous status as being kind of like the Pied Piper of women's achievement and women's success in the marketplace, criticisms of them have overrided criticisms of, like, you know, men in high powering positions.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to, because we're lumping them in with every other woman who's ever done anything of any achievement, it does feel like that annoyance with any woman who has succeeded permeates, like, all.
Well, I also...
of the women who have succeeded. Does that make sense?
No, it does. And I don't think that you can be a woman who succeeds, especially in, you know, today's culture, without part of the discussion being about the fact that you're a woman blank. Like, you're a woman of your profession. And, you know, especially when it comes to public figures, like, you are marketing yourself. So, like, it's inevitable that you would be inciting some of the same kind of...
like, talking points.
Yeah, talking points as these women, because, oh, you're like a female rock musician. We don't have a lot of those. And so that conversation begins, and then it sounds like you are also co-opting your female identity as a way of saying that, like, people should support you and give you money.
Well, again, it comes into that whole concept of commodifying social justice, right? Like, if you're commodifying feminism, you also end up becoming commodified as, like, a successful female figure.
Yeah.
And so to sell you to the public, you have to kind of adhere to a certain identity, which then props you up for extra criticism.
Totally.
And I think the difference between someone like Sophia Amoroso versus, like, Greta Gerwig is that Sophia Amoroso brought that upon her damn self, whereas Greta Gerwig was kind of shoved into the position of having... But at the same time, I do think that we can have reasonable discussions about the way that women who make it to the top of their workplace, we can talk about the limitations they have to face and whatever outside of a class argument. Mm-hmm. When we bring class into it and when we bring kind of like an anti-capitalist approach, then it becomes harder to take those limitations seriously when they talk about them. People like Greta Gerwig, I don't think, are sitting on, like, whatever mountains of workers who are being exploited, right? So it's not the same thing.
No, it's not the same thing.
And I think it's an unfair criticism. Does that make any, am I making any
No,
coherence?
I think it's true. Like, I think it's hard because it's, I honestly think that any woman who finds any success in the public eye is going to get lumped into that. And then there's just always going to be a wave of backlash. And it reminds me of this recent bonus episode that You're Wrong About did for their Patreon, which tracked the career of Anne Hathaway and the turn from her being like this new ingenue to this figure that everybody hated, and kind of her redemption. Anne Hathaway isn't a girl boss, but, like, she's a very eager woman who, like, strives for perfectionism in her career. She's, you know, she's a theater girl, and it kind of led her to become a target for people who don't like those traits in women. And I do think that just by being someone who cared about what she was doing and putting herself out there and wanting to succeed, wanting that Oscar, she was going into, like, this bear's den of people who were ready to go after her. And they compared her to Jennifer Lawrence, who during the Anne Hathaway hate was sort of her antithesis, because she was clumsy and unpolished and didn't care.
She did not care.
And it feels like there is also this expectation that you have to underplay your success as a woman. You can't talk about how you're a woman who is successful. You can't talk about the things you've overcome. And you have to also underplay it and be like, I don't really give a fuck that I'm here.
So what you're trying to say is they hate to see a girl boss winning.
They hate to see a girl boss winning.
Yes, I agree.
And also, like, I don't want to get too, like, think of the girl bosses here. But I just think that kind of criticism, valid criticism of these, like, actual girl bosses is just inevitably going to bleed into the way we talk about it, because we're always looking for reasons to hate women. Just gonna say it.
Yeah, I think that girl boss has kind of become synonymous with just annoying.
Yeah.
And I think that the dilution of that word has caused great damage to annoying girls everywhere, yeah. including myself.
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to these...
Did you just call me annoying?
No, that was the wind.
That was Mooney.
Mooney, I told you she'd sound in at some point. And who knows you best?
If anyone thinks I'm annoying, it's my fucking cat. Let's be real. I'm honestly always shoving my face all up in her face.
The audacity, because Mooney keeps you up all night because she cannot figure out how she wants to sleep on top of you.
She sleeps like literally between my legs every single night. It's insane.
And then when Maya goes away, Mooney sleeps in my room and she has the same thing to me. And I'm like, I'm not your mother. So going back to these girl boss memes, they're products of the class conscious Gen Z and are in many ways another way to make fun of out of touch millennials. But unlike side parted hair, skinny jeans, or cursive font, the girl boss is obviously more political. Millennials were handed a rough fucking deal economically and were in some ways pushed to adopt a hustle mentality if they ever wanted to afford the basic luxuries of like home ownership or university education. And this is only going to be worse for Gen Z. To me, there are sort of two different things to criticize which get muddled under the term girl boss. The first is hustle culture, which has forced so many people of our generation to become multi-hyphenate because a single job is not a promise for a living wage. As someone who has created a career from her hobby, I'm sure you have thoughts.
Totally. I think I am kind of an exception because I do just do this kind of one job. I am trying to diversify, but that's more of like a personal choice. I think I just am lucky that I found like the one medium that actually does afford you a stable enough income. That did come after like a year and a half of doing multiple things at once to be able to make this a stable income. So I totally get it. But I don't know if I would say that I'm in the place now where I have to be a multi-hyphenate person. I mean, I like to just call myself a multi-hyphenate person because YouTube is like quite literally the ugliest job title on earth.
But so you introduce yourself as a multi-hyphenate?
Yeah, I'm Maya. I'm a thinker. I'm a lover. I'm a doer. And I'm a giver.
I'm a joker. I'm a smoker. I'm a midnight toker.
I'm a bitch. I'm a lover. I'm a child. I'm a mother. And that's women everywhere.
But you have had to like monetize, or not had to, but you've fallen into a career where you've monetized your hobby.
Totally. And I think I monetize everything I do at this point because my job doesn't have any boundaries or structure.
Yeah. And I think that that plays into it, right? Like,
I would say the same for you, though. Like, you are definitely a multi-hyphenate person. You do like a million different things to make income.
Yeah, I definitely feel the weight of hustle culture. I'll be honest. I dip my toes in a few things and
she has her fingers in a few pies.
I do think a lot of us like have had to learn extra skills on the side so that we can make money doing freelance gigs. We're like, oh, these are my 2 days off, so I better make time to do my other work that I'm supposed to do.
If I just take this quick coding class online, maybe I will be hired for this like social media job.
Yeah. I mean, people learning Photoshop and Adobe Suite generally.
You.
Yeah. Yeah, we have to do all this and just like at the same time accept less money than our parents did for like the same amount of work. And this is not specifically gendered, but it becomes one when we add it to the second thing that I think falls under this girl boss word is the commodification of women's empowerment, which we've been talking about. But like, yeah, you would have to be stupid as a business nowadays to not like brand yourself towards that market. And then there are products made and marketed towards women who are convinced that by using them, they will be in the room where they decide what to market to women next. Women who are paying to go to like a Rachel Hollis seminar because they want to be the next Rachel Hollis and have her own seminar.
So like an MLM.
Yeah.
I feel like MLM culture really has so much played into this kind of women's empowerment narrative. Like historically, it's been around for so long, the way that it preys upon women. It preyed upon like housewives and the concept of like giving them purpose, basically. But then it's this whole concept of you can be your own boss and you can work from home in the domestic sphere while still making tons of money. And then you can get a bunch of other women under your purview and then they can get a bunch of women under them and they can get a bunch of women under them and you're all going to be making millions and millions of dollars all from the comfort of your home. And like I feel like that really kind of engendered this ideology. Very early on.
I mean, if you think about the mid-20th century, all these, you know, antidepressants and shit came out to give to housewives so that they could cope with, you know, the fact that they were stuck inside the house and they weren't occupied with things beyond housework and taking care of children. And now we've basically just replaced that with ways that they can contribute to the economy. Like, yeah. There's always someone trying to prey on these moments because we don't value the work that they do and we don't let them, you know, just enjoy the time that they don't have to be doing it.
Well, and it definitely kind of plays into the backlash against second wave feminism because everyone's like, why did you try to get us into the workplace? When I don't think that was kind of the intent behind getting women in the workplace. No. I don't think the intent behind getting women in the workplace was to make them more productive for the economy. I think it was to...
No, but MLM isn't the workplace. And MLM is something you do while your kid's down for a nap.
Yeah. But even with, like, Working Girl and, like, Murphy Brown, like, the movies that really pushed women to get into an office environment, like, early on in second wave feminism, I don't think that asking women to get out of the domestic sphere and being, like, child bearers, I don't think it was necessarily a capitalistic argument.
I think that there was something really important about financial independence, and the reason we had all these women in these horrible marriages with men during the kind of nuclear family times and men were able to, like, mistreat women so much is because they relied on them financially. They didn't have anywhere to go. If you aren't the one who's in charge of, like, the checks and the bank account, then what are you supposed to do? And I think it's important that women are able to take care of themselves financially and earn a living wage, but I think that that has been warped now
into sitting on an empire.
Yeah, it's like, it's not enough to be able to take care of yourself and know that you'll be okay if anything happens in your marriage. It's just not enough to have what you need. You need everything.
Yeah.
To quote Dorit Kemsley in The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, I won't settle for anything less than everything. But seriously, I mean, that is the capitalism part as well, right? It's like, you can't just be satisfied with your life. And especially now that, like, women's personal sense of self-worth is tied up in how much they're earning and how high they're succeeding, it becomes even worse.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, in your own work, feel, like, the pressure at all to make your gender as, like, part of your brand, part of your success? Like, do you consider yourself, like, a female YouTuber? Feel like you have a different perspective than your male YouTuber peers?
I think when I started on YouTube, there really weren't a ton of women on there in this, like, niche that I'm in, to be honest. Like, I think there was, like, Lindsay Ellis. There's a few people, obviously, but there weren't as many women as there are now. And I think with that, and then also being a woman on the internet and talking about feminism, which was not really a thing when I made my first video, was not as much of a thing, at least, when I made my first video. Yeah, you have to kind of take into account, like, the difference in the way the audiences treat you and like what you're talking about. Like, I talk about a lot of things. I think my work appeals a lot to, like, younger women, and because I'm writing about myself and, like, I'm writing about my values as a person in this world. Like, it's a situated form of writing. I'm not just trying to write from, like, an objective stance. So yeah, I do think I there is, like, a gendered element to what I'm doing. And then also, yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff I can't get away with saying on YouTube that I think my male peers do very much get away with saying. And I think that the only people who have really been, like, fully taken down in my sphere are women. So, you know, I think that there is absolutely an element to that.
The girl boss is like a Frankenstein's monster of capitalism and patriarchy.
It is kind of this little monster that got away from all of us.
Yeah.
Or no, because Frankenstein's monster is nice and you feel bad for him.
Oh, yeah.
We don't feel bad for the girl boss. I guess we do. We are kind of sympathizing with her a little bit.
Well, we're sympathizing with women who are offshoots of this that aren't actual girl bosses.
Yeah.
We're not sympathizing with Sophia Amoroso.
Oh, I don't give a flying fuck about Sophia Amoroso.
As Sophia Amoroso would say, we live in a capitalist society. And as I would say, we're conditioned to live by those values even if we ourselves are critical of them. And you could be like her and you could abandon that criticism, or you could try and navigate that. And I know that much of my self-worth has become tangled up with the idea of achievement, like material success. And honestly, the only time I've been able to separate those things as an adult is when I was living at home during the early pandemic, and, like, I could not work.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't really think about my roles in anything. I just did things for myself.
We also live in a very hustly city, so it feels like everyone around you is constantly trying to like optimize.
Totally.
And that can be difficult sometimes.
Socializing is just networking a lot of the time.
Totally. And I feel a similar way, just that I feel like my work is very self-directed, and when I'm not working, I feel guilty like constantly all the time. And I think it's just a larger problem with hustle culture.
Yeah. And I mean, there's like really no way to not participate in capitalism and also just be brainwashed by its principles living in North America. And yeah, I guess I wanted to ask, do you have any insights just in your own experience of navigating a career where you were trying to criticize capitalism but also do have to like operate within it?
Yeah, like literally every month. Yeah. I have sponsors. That's my main form of income. And sometimes I've had to sell a product. And that is definitely at odds with many of the things I've said in my videos, right? And I once got criticized. I did a fast fashion video and I worked with a company, which I won't say here because I've partnered with them before. But I worked with a company selling a product that was like a kind of like a natural beauty product, or not even a natural beauty, like a natural hygiene product, basically. And I got a ton of flack in the comments, basically being like, oh, so you think that fast fashion is bad and you're trying to be anti-capitalist, but then you're selling us this natural product? And I was like, yeah, that's probably poorly timed that I put that particular sponsorship on that video. But at the same time, it was like, this is how I'm making money off this content that you're watching for free. Like, I can't really, this content takes me a lot of time to make. I'm not even trying to be like, oh, my work is so hard. No. It more is just kind of like if I can get this content out as often as I do and with the amount of attention paid to it as I do have to be compensated for it at this point in my life.
I also think there's a difference between you putting in this brief ad for this product. There's a difference between that and you being like, and here is my Broy de Chanel like collab with them selling,
or like
more
merch.
Yeah,
like when people do merch, I'm just like, no one needs another shitty t-shirt out in the world. I'm sorry, like no one needs another fucking Kirkland
unless
t-shirt,
it
like,
says
Gildan t-shirt.
Girl, stop apologizing for calling women dot dot dot.
Guys, I say that word all the time.
I know, sometimes
I don't care.
Sometimes we'll be watching reality TV and I'm like, we're yelling at the screen and I'm like, oh my god, do the people next door think we're having an argument or something?
Have I called Lisa Renna that before? Yes, I have.
I mean,
and I stand by it.
She's called herself one. Yeah, like we're stuck in this position also where we're like taught to subconsciously revere the values of capitalism. And like, even if we're outright critical of them, I do think we're always in some way, at least for me, like I'm still trying to like succeed by those standards a lot of the time, even if I'm not like going out there going,
want to be able to make rent every month in this very expensive city.
Yeah.
And be able to enjoy and like have a quality of life and be able to go enjoy life on the side of paying rent. I don't think that that's an insane thing to want.
No.
To do.
But it's also, I do honestly think though that my like conceptions of how I feel good about myself,
yeah, totally,
is based in those markers of success. But because of all of this, like, I don't think that Girl Boss, or at least, you know, what it stands for, is actually going to ever truly disappear.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we might not call things Girl Boss. That might be ironic. But this idea of, like, a woman who is checking all of the boxes and, like, constantly optimizing everything she does to succeed the most, that's not going anywhere. And there's, of course, like, a rise of romanticizing the trad wife within some parts of the left, which is, like, for people who don't know, a traditional stay-at-home wife, as an attempt at like an antidote to having it all. But this idea, of course, is like problematic in its own ways.
Yeah.
And we know that in the case of many working women, like they're also already pulling double shifts as caregivers. And in mainstream culture, it is sort of expected to do both anyways. So there's like an inherent privilege in being able to be a trad wife. But have you ever felt the urge to go marry yourself off?
Yeah, why do you think I'm on Raya?
Why is it so appealing?
I'm just kidding. I just think Raya's funny. Yeah, of course. I literally, at the end of university, made a seeking arrangements account and like tried to find a sugar daddy. I was like, I'm so tired of being broke. I'm so tired of it. And I don't want to work another fucking restaurant job. Of course.
I know. When you're really tired and sick of trying and like having a career, you're like, oh, it'd be so nice to like quit this,
Get out of this.
But then I so much enjoy working. Like, I just think when I'm not working, I think you feel this too. Yeah. My mental health goes into the gutter. Like, I do think human beings were made to be
productive
and kind of laboring, honestly, not laboring under this exploitative system. Mm-hmm. But I do think we've always, you know, we used to have to survive, and that was kind of our main purpose, was just trying to survive, and that's how we were utilizing our brains. We don't need that anymore, and we live in this kind of world where we have a lot of comforts, but our brains are just kind of melting when we're not doing things. But there's other ways to keep your brain active besides working, I think. Yeah. I think the anti-work movement's fun and great, but I actually enjoy working, and I don't think that has to be for everyone. Yeah. I wish that most people could just do what they like to do and still be able to live in our world. And unfortunately, that's just not how it is.
Yeah, I actually love doing very little, which is not to say that I'm...
She's a lazy girl.
I'm lazy. If I could just sit around and like do little hobbies and like tinker with my little hobbies all day and then sit in the park... I've found ways to keep myself occupied with other things. It's not like I'm just sitting in a room doing nothing
all day.
And like, I don't like doing nothing actually, but sometimes it sounds appealing. But obviously, and I'm not saying being a trad wife means doing nothing, because you're doing a fuck ton still.
I think people like feeling like they have purpose, but that doesn't mean they have to feel like they have purpose by working a minimum wage job or by becoming an evil overlord.
I know, but then sometimes it's like when you're working that minimum wage job and you're trying to find purpose outside of that, there's just not as much time.
There isn't time, no. And then, well, that's why I just don't think that minimum wage jobs help anyone. I mean, they help our society, but... they shouldn't be minimum wage. Anyways, that's another conversation for another time.
You know, overall, women in like the global north have already cemented themselves in the workplace. And I'm speaking on that because that's, you know, what I'm familiar with. But with an impending recession and like the shrinking of the middle class, like it feels just unlikely that women are going to like move en masse to the kitchen. Like we're there. We make up half of employed people. We're not.
I think we're more employed than men at this point. We're like more educated in North America than men, like in terms of university education, and we're more, I think that we are actually working more. Don't count me on that statistic, but I'm pretty sure I heard that recently.
Like, I don't think that we're actually all gonna become trad wives is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, it is a privilege to be a housewife. Like, even if it's rooted in like, gender depression and gendered roles, it's like to have the money to have a single income family is very privileged.
Okay, I figured out what the solution to this is.
What?
You be my trad wife.
Oh my god, I could never. Because Maya never agrees with this, but I think that I'm the dad and she's the mom.
I won't even indulge
that. No, because I'm daddy.
You spent like 24 hours building a bed.
But at least I had the gusto to try. And also, it was more like 9 hours.
Girl, wash your face.
Girls, I'm going to stop apologizing.
Rehash is hosted by Hannah Rain and me, Maia. It's produced and edited by me, and the intro and outro song is produced by our talented friend, Ian Mills. Thanks for listening.